Hugh Hefner, a true American icon, created an empire that was unrivaled.
Although some of us bunnies may have gone rogue, it's because of the love and respect that we received from the man behind it all.
Because after all, we did learn from the best.
Relive the stories from the most prominent celebrity home in history.
What happens in the grotto stays in the grotto.
From those of us that lived it,
the employees that worked it,
and the guests who loved it.
And
the mayhem continues.
All right, we are Rogue Bunnies Mayhem. We have
Michael Burke,
woot, woot, woot.
Baywatch fame in the house.
Michael Burke is the famous producer, director, creator of Baywatch, and he has made a lot of stars.
Well, we had a great relationship with Playboy.
Yeah, I would say so.
We went back and forth, but you know, it started with Erika Liniak.
Yeah, Erika Liniak.
But Erika, we cast her when the show was on NBC.
Right.
And when NBC found out she had been in Playboy, they wanted us to fire her. They didn't want us to hire her.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, we hadn't started filming yet. We had just cast her when they found out she was in Playboy. And we fought for Erika. And we won that fight. And then after that...
Then you just said, open the book. We want all of them.
Pamela and Gina Lee didn't want to do it. And they kept offering her more and more.
She wasn't
more
a playmate,
money.
Gina Lee Nolan.
No, but she did a pictorial.
She did, after she was in Baywatch.
Yeah, but she didn't. She turned it down all this time until she did a show that we did called Sheena.
Oh, Sheena, that was a...
Sheena, Queen of the Jungle.
Right, right. She rode on a zebra?
Yeah, yeah.
I remember. I'm going back to my childhood, bro.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So my story of coming to Playboy for the first time.
Yeah, we want to hear about this.
Yeah, through Mark Saginaw.
Doc
Saginaw.
Yeah. And my relationship with Mary. I think that Mary should be a topic of
absolutely
every episode. I mean,
yes. You know,
when people find out who Mary was, who Hef's right hand person.
Everything.
I mean, everything.
Yeah. I think there should be a movie about Mary.
Honestly. There was something about Mary.
There really should.
So I think Mary's
it's iconic.
Story is,
I mean, if people knew the backstory of Mary, she was a race car driver.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't think a lot of people knew that. She's a badass.
If Mary liked you, you could come to the mansion. If Mary didn't like you,
yeah.
you were out.
You know, it's unfortunate that and I want to top this, since we're right at Mary, is that there are people out there that are trying to trash Mary. And it blows my mind.
Well, they just
it's
don't.
Like, are you kidding
they,
me?
They don't. They're trying to trash Mary.
Well, but we're in a trend right now where people are trashing those that have deceased.
Yeah.
Once they pass, they can't defend themselves. So all of a sudden, people make up all kinds of salacious stories to try to make the vilify persons that maybe, hey, sorry, they put you in your place.
Well,
you know?
I could tell you one thing. Mary couldn't give a F what anybody had to say about her. She just she had no Fs to give.
You know, she had such a great soul and such a great heart, but she was strong. And, you know, as a writer, I could look at Mary, I could look at that situation, I could go, okay, you could take that perspective and that point of view from somebody else's, you know, experience with Mary and turn that into a negative, because not everybody liked Mary because she was tough on them. She was the gatekeeper.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, she was very loyal to Hef, and had she not passed away at the time that she did, and I mean, those last couple of years she wasn't around, and look what happened.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think a lot of bad decisions were made once Mary passed.
He heavily relied on her for quite a bit. And he even said at one point, she's probably the most intimate relationship he's ever had with a human being on the planet was with Mary O'Connor, and they never had sex. So they were pretty tight knit. I mean, they spent over 50 years together. So we'll definitely have to do a show about Mary because I have a lot of stories about her.
No, I think.
But tell us how you came to, how did you get to come to Playboy? Were you already doing Baywatch? Had you?
I was doing Baywatch, but I also played poker with Hef's doctor, Mark Saginaw.
Right.
There were movie nights. You know, Friday nights were old classic movies. Saturday nights were Hef's choice, different kind of weird movies. And then Sunday nights were new movies, first run movies that hadn't even been in the theaters yet. So I said to Mark, I'd love to go to one of those nights. Maybe the Friday night, he said, was the best. The old movies. I love old movies.
That was my favorite, too.
He even did some of the old
silent ones where we brought that piano player.
He was very, what was his name? So cool. Oh, man. I'm blanking, but yeah, they would come in, we'd tune up the piano, and then we had the organ.
So Mark said, let me talk to Mary. And he talked to Mary, and I was doing Baywatch. We'd use Playmates, all that stuff. Sure, of course. I
mean, was Pam Anderson on already at this point?
No, I think it was before Pam. It was, okay. You know, so it was, so the first time I came up for movie night, I mean, you know, Hef and I, he liked me, I liked him, or whatever. So if I wanted to come up again for other movies, I just would have to call Mary. And then actually it was Joyce,
yep.
Who worked for Mary. Joyce would be the one that would say, let me check, just, you know, can I come tonight? So one night I came up there. And I couldn't get in the gate. They didn't, you know, you talk to The Rock,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
You pull up to the gate, there was a speaker in The Rock, and it's Michael Burke. Sorry, you're not in the list. I said, well, I talked to Joyce and whatever, you know, there must be some mistake, you know. But finally, I came in. The next time, what Mary did is she just said, so we don't have that kind of confusion again of you having to call every time, she just put me on the permanent list.
Oh, nice.
That's awesome.
That I could come up any weekend night. And it was interesting transitions also, because the meal was the best.
Yeah.
Hef would sit at the front of the table. Ray Anthony would sit to his right.
He's still alive with us.
He's 100 years old. He's a bandit.
102.
He'd sit to the right. And then, you know, Hef's
102, yes.
Girlfriends, whoever they were at the time, would sit to his left and around that. And then other interesting people, Mort Saul, comedians, you know, Vincent Bugliosi, the prosecutor, prosecuted Manson.
Yeah.
There was such a great group of people that you wouldn't meet anywhere else. And you'd have all these great conversations at dinner and then watch the movie. And Richard Band, who actually sat third, and he would write for Friday Night's Movies, the history of that movie.
For Hef, yeah.
For Hef. He would write it, and then Hef would take it, and Hef would edit it. God, I wish I had those notes.
Those were all sold with his collection.
Were they?
All the notes, yeah.
So he would then tell the story behind the movie, which, you know, for movie buff, was just great. I actually have video of him doing the introduction of Casablanca. On his birthday every year, it would be Casablanca. And he'd have like Rick's Cafe America, and everybody would wear white. The men would wear white. The women
loved
would,
Casablanca.
You know,
that
so
was my favorite night became, of the whole year. It was so magical. It was a magical night there.
It was.
Yeah, it was. So it was just a great introduction. And when you'd go into the theater, certain people would have their own seats. Okay, there was a couch up front.
Yes.
Hef would be on the left of the couch, so he can get up and sit on the armrest when he gave
and
his notes.
Just like this, actually.
Just like this.
Exactly like this. And
the girls would be next to him and, you know, have blankets over them. On the floor, there'd be pillows.
That's where Jen would sit.
There'd be, yeah.
You know, Richard Band was
that was a regular
on the
place. Richard Band, yeah.
He John liked, and I were on the couch over
you,
to the
I
side.
Would, and basically, I started bringing my wife up.
Someone had to get bumped.
So, well, what happened is when you first walked in, there were two chairs. There was Joel and Allison.
And
Allison would sit in the first two chairs. They were like, you know, she was his social secretary, used to be.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, John was a rock and roller. They, you know, they'd been up there for years. They had that spot. And there were two chairs behind. Oh, the ones behind him were
Ray Anthony.
No, it was Mark Rossler.
That's right.
Keith, his brother Keith.
Keith had his spot on the third couch. There were also three levels of couches, and then behind that, folding chairs. And you had to be strategic to get the folding chairs. You had to be respectful of the people that had been there before. But if you got there early and at a certain
you would have to get the pad of paper, Hugh Hefner pad of paper out of the office in the back.
With his ass. Still have some of those pads.
Yeah, I saw the pads of paper. And you'd put your name... name on there, and then you put it on the seat. And then Mary's job was to come in and move those around where she wanted people. And when she didn't come, then we kind of started doing it ourselves. But
Audra, where did you like to sit? Did you have a favorite spot?
I was always laying down with the pillows in the front.
I did that too a lot.
Same.
And you know,
Richard Band was a lucky man.
Oh, yes, he was. He showed us how to stack those pillows just right. So they had, like, you had. Like,
well, something else about the mansion. I think I was allowed to come. Movie would start at 7. 7?
6.
6. So dinner, I was kind of allowed to come at 5. But then I was able to push it to like 4:30 to get there a little bit early at 4:30.
See, you were
started...
special. There was only a few that actually got that early call time.
Yeah. I was fortunate enough to go out with the group one night in the limo to the Rainbow. So the first time I'm at that club, I'm with Mark Saginaw, the whole group, I'm invited, I'm out in the inn, you know. And hey, yeah, I produced Baywatch, I was around all that other stuff, but I was like a kid in a candy store. I mean,
yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. I know we've had some amazing times up at the Playboy Mansion, but you know, your amazing career with Baywatch. I mean,
yeah, I have
there's
questions.
Not a person that doesn't know about Baywatch. I mean, no. Especially yeah. with Pam Anderson now coming back out. I understand you have some new projects coming out.
Yeah,
we want to talk about that. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Rogue Bunnies Mayhem.
Did you miss out on the first two Rogue Bunnies trading card drops? Don't let that happen again. Series 3 digital trading cards will be dropping very soon, and we have brand new gorgeous Rogue Bunnies to collect. Want more details? Make sure to join our Discord for the most up-to-date announcements. You can go to roguebunnies.com to find our official links. In the meantime, get your Dapper wallet ready to collect Rogue Bunnies Series 3 packs. And the mayhem continues.
Welcome to the metaverse!
You know, it's really cool as we're like flashing back. I'm having major flashbacks as we start going through, you know, even just like we were talking about the different tiers and I'm picturing the grotto. I mentioned earlier that I had a dream literally being at the mansion last night, wow. Running around out of the blue, just wanted to visit. And I'm like setting up. I'm like having to hurry up and set up for, I think it was Christmas. I think Jen, we had put out something to our VIPs.
Yeah. So McGunkie wanted to know, I read that Baywatch was canceled after its first season. He's curious how you pitched to revive the show for it to eventually become the most watched television series in the world, even making the Guinness Book of World Records.
Whoa, he does his homework, McGunkie.
Let me answer that because I think it is in the top 10 of Hollywood stories, great yeah. Hollywood stories. It is in the top 10. It's amazing what happened. I've got to tell you the backstory and the characters involved because I have a writing and producing partner named Doug Schwartz. He and I are cousins. We're first cousins. Our mothers were sisters. We grew up together. When he was 13 for his bar mitzvah, our uncle Sherwood, who is Sherwood Schwartz, who created Gilligan's Island and Brady Bunch,
oh my gosh.
Our uncle gave Doug an 8mm movie camera for his bar mitzvah.
Nepotism.
And he had, you know, got about $250 in money from, so we said, let's go out and make a movie. So we went out to the Bronson Caves where a lot of shows have been shot, and we did a war movie as kids. We had all kids as actors. We did a Korean War movie and heroes and all rescuing the girl. We edited it together, showed it in the backyard, and charged money for popcorn and candy. Well, one of the people that came there, a neighbor, was an executive at CBS, and he loved this little movie that this 12 and 13-year-old kids had made, and brought us over to CBS to show the movie to the executives of CBS, and CBS bought our movie for $5,000. It cost us $300 to make, and we sold our first movie to CBS at 12 and 13. The next summer, we started an all-kids motion picture company.
Oh, that's cool.
And yeah, we actually went to Desilu Studios. Lucille Ball and Ricky Desi Arnaz allowed students to come and apprentice at the studio to become our crew. And but then we hit a cold streak.
It happens. And I'm getting 17. To,
yeah. Well, we were in our 20s and basically selling carpet door to door. We figured we had to get an actress attached. So we knew Lindsay Wagner was very hot after the Bionic Woman.
Wow.
She was very hot. So we wrote a treatment about a woman doctor who goes to Appalachia to bring modern medicine to the, you know, the natural medicine and this conflict and all this other stuff. She loved it. She took it to CBS and said, I want to do this as my next movie. And so we went up to Lake Arrowhead and we wrote the script, and it was 150 pages long. It was too long. But I just really got into it, and I didn't know where to cut it. So we sent it to her to figure out where we're going to cut it. And she said, I love every word of it. She went to CBS, said, I don't want to cut anything. I want to do this as is. So our movie became the first ever three-hour movie on television.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
It became the first time.
What was it called?
It was called The Incredible Journey of Dr. Meg Laurel. And it became the highest rated movie of the year because it became an event. It was the first three-hour ever. So it was an event. It was Lindsay Wagner and Jane Wyman and all this other stuff. Highest rated movie of the year, 52 share, won two Emmy Awards. And so Doug and I, my cousin and I, were like started making TV movies. And we made all these TV movies, one after the other. Each one had a story. And this is all a precursor to Baywatch. So after all these movies, 20th Century Fox called to make an overall deal with us to come and create series. We had never written an episode of anything, but we got this huge deal to come over. And, you know, we had a bungalow on the lot of 20th Century Fox. I mean, it was amazing, you know, because wow. We were into this since we were kids. We're driving around the lot. So they wanted to teach us how to do series, so they assigned us to a show called Manimal, which was, this is 1976 or something like that. I just have before. Manimal was a guy that could become animals, a cop that could become different animals. But anyway, we learned a lot. We did our first series there starring David Rappaport, who was a little person who was the star of Time Bandits.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody thought we were crazy. Our first series, we were going to do it for a dwarf. But we wrote this show about a little toy maker who had used his toys kind of like MacGyver did, and was an adventure. Nobody thought we'd get on the air. We got on the air. We got on CBS. We were on opposite the Cosby Show. Did pretty well. So that's when Grant Tinker, who had been Mary Tyler Moore's husband and the head of MTM and the head of NBC, started his own studio called GTG, Grant Tinker Gannett. And it was a brand new studio. He bought the Culver lot where they shot Gone with the Wind and all this other stuff. And now he had to bring in show creators. Well, he liked the creativity that we had demonstrated with our shows and brought us over. We were his first overall deal. So, okay, we're here to create shows. So they turned down everything we pitched. We pitched a Jerry Seinfeld show. They didn't think he was funny.
Wow.
6 months into the deal, our agent comes to our office, and we're in that great old building, and our agent comes and says, look, they're paying you a lot of money, and you haven't sold any. They haven't liked anything you've pitched them. You've got to come up with something. So Doug and I went to the beach. We went to the Santa Monica Beach because we always did our great best work at the beach. We smoke a joint, and we're walking, and we're trying to figure out what the fuck
God, you smoke pot?
I'm a big advocate for pot and creativity. I'm a big advocate. I actually have a TV station on called Weed TV. So we go to the beach and we smoke a joint. We don't want to do a lawyer show, a cop show, a detective show, whatever. And we see this lifeguard running down from the ramp and running into the ocean and diving into the ocean. And then we see another lifeguard coming the other way. And there's people caught in a riptide. So then here come these, you know, yellow truck with lights and sirens and a boat coming in from offshore. And we're looking at this going, everyone is in bathing suits. How did no one ever think of this before?
I now get it. Because you were stoned, you saw everything in slow motion.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I'll tell you this.
Oh, brings us to Pamela Anderson right in slow motion.
The slow motion story is not as interesting. My partner Greg, who was a lifeguard, who happened to be Doug's brother-in-law, was a documentary filmmaker who filmed the Olympics. He had just come back from filming the Olympics, where the sprinters in the 100-meter dash, it's so fast you shoot it in slow motion. So when we shot our lifeguards running to the rescue, we shot them in slow motion to show their athleticism, never thinking it would become the signature of the show or the sex thing or.
The sex thing.
But actually, they had to learn how to run in semi-slow motion, because if you ran
without
too
jiggling
fast,
everywhere.
Well, if you ran too fast and you slowed it down, you'd see every jiggle.
Yeah.
So they had to make it look like they were running fast, but running slower that we could then slow down and make it into slow motion.
Wow.
Was there running training going on?
When we did the pilot, and by the way, getting to the pilot, let me jump back a second, because basically, okay, so we go back to the studio. We go back to GTG, and we come in for a pitch meeting, and this is it. This is the one we're going to do. And we pitch this lifeguard show. And they listen, stoic, and they go, Yeah. Who's going to want to watch like Beach Boys, you know, in their how many times can you do CPR? You know, and we go,
Every episode.
There's 8 million people that come to the beach. Each one has their story, you know. So they said, no. Well, Greg had just come back from the Olympics and had all this equipment. So we went in and we said, look, let us film this weekend. Give us $25,000. Let us go out and film and do a music video and show you what the show can be. So they did. So that weekend we went out with, it was Memorial Day weekend. We went out with three cameras, Doug, Greg, and I, and we shot people coming to the beach and, you know, lifeguards. And we had one lifeguard who was a friend of ours named Mike Newman. And Mike Newman was the lifeguard in this music video. He ended up being in every episode of Baywatch. He was in more episodes than David Hasselhoff. So we did this 3-minute video and edited it to Don Henley's Boys of Summer.
Oh, yeah.
And it was lifeguards running to the rescue. It was picking up baby. It was like sexy. It was all this stuff. We brought it to Grant Tinker and said, look, he was a mentor to a guy named Brandon Tartikoff at NBC, who was a genius. He was the boy genius, probably the best TV executive ever. So we set up a screening to show him this video. And he looks at the video and he goes, I get it, it's hot, it's sexy, but I don't think you could do enough stories. I don't think there's 22 episodes. So we said, look, we've done all these TV movies. Let us just do a TV movie about it. So he goes, okay, you guys have done a lot of good movies. I'll do a movie. But he said, I want panic in the title and Malibu in the title. So our TV movie that we did, pilot movie, was called Baywatch Panic at Malibu Pier. There was no pier. There was no panic. There was that, but that was the title.
I'm like, Malibu Pier, what?
So now I've got to write this. Oh, no. So no, again, Hollywood story. The movie was a big success, got great ratings, but he still wouldn't pick it up unless we wrote this thing. So at the studio, they get nervous that Burke and Schwartz, you know, can't just do this on their own. They haven't run a show this big before. So they have other writers under contract at the studio doing other shows. Unbeknownst to us, they ask every writer to do Baywatch stories.
Oh, wow.
Deliver those stories to their head of production, who wasn't a story guy. He then takes, Doug and I, meanwhile, do our 22 stories. He takes everybody's story, mixes and matches and does this thing, puts our name on it and sends it to NBC. NBC finally says, look, the movie did well enough. We're going to pick this up to series, but whoever wrote these episodes doesn't know what the fuck they're doing. A stories, B stories, they don't know the proper structure. We were totally unaware that they had sent in
right.
We had no clue. So NBC says, we want another executive producer to come on over Burke and Schwartz. Or with Burke and Schwartz, but it was really...
Right.
And the studio didn't say, oh, look, it wasn't them that wrote that. That was us. We fucked up. They know what they're doing. The studio wanted somebody that they could control more.
They wanted their own person.
So now you talk about the drama. They brought in this guy who was just terrible. And he was political. He knew, and he basically, I was the writer. Doug was working with directors. Greg was doing the montages and rescues. And basically he said, I can't work with Michael here. And they said, told me, go stay home. So I left Baywatch halfway through the first season because what they wanted to do was Cops on the Beach. What NBC and the studio wanted to do was Cops on the Beach. Murders on the Beach, drug deals, this, that, and the other. Because that's what they knew, it was cop series. That's not the show I wanted to do. I wanted to do the personal stories of the lifeguards. It was a soap opera, you know? Let's face it, with a great action and great-looking people wearing bathing suits. So I was gone. What happens is, at the end of the season, Baywatch is doing badly. GTG, the studio, has performed so horribly, Gannett pulled its funding and the studio went out of business. And with the studio out of business, there was no one to deficit finance Baywatch, so it was canceled. The show was canceled. So the fact is, our agent said, no problem. We were still hot. We had two series on the air in a row. We had a good track record. He sold us a new overall deal with 3-foot pilots from the networks. We were sitting pretty, developing new stuff. When we get a call from a guy named Paul Talbot, who ran a little distribution company, foreign distribution company called Fremantle, which is now a $1 billion company because it was Baywatch. Can you produce Baywatch is doing well in Europe. It's doing well in England. It's kicking ass in Germany. Everybody loves Hasselhoff. Can you do new shows? We said, no, we don't own the show. So we go to a Passover dinner at Uncle Sherwood Schwartz's house, Gilligan's Island, Brady Bunch.
Yeah.
We tell him they're interested in doing new shows, but we don't have the rights. We don't have all that stuff. And so Sherwood says, I'll never forget these words. He said, Baywatch is your Gilligan's Island. Go to see Grant Tinker. Gannett's out of business. The studio's out of business. There's no one owns the show. See if he will sell you the rights to the show back so you could do the show. So we tell our agent that. He says, no, it'll never happen. No one can do a syndicated show for the budget of a network show, and nobody sells the rights back because if, you know, whatever, it doesn't happen. We said, well, we're going to try. So we go to see Grant Tinker, and we tell him we want to try to get it on our first run syndication. We've met a guy, Sherwood introduced us to a guy named Al Burton, who had brought Charles in Charge, which had been a network show that was canceled. He got it into syndication, and it did well. So he told us kind of how to do it. So Grant Tinker said, okay, well, listen, I like you guys. I'll go try it, but I have to sell it to you. Go, okay, here it comes.
$1.
$10.
Oh, $10.
What?
We bought the rights to Baywatch back for $10.
Wow.
So now we have to figure out what to do with it. So there's a convention called NAPD. We go and rent a booth and put sand on the ground, hire models to wear red bathing suits. We've got all this film from the first season. We can cut a great promo. So we end, but we needed Hasselhoff back. So we went to Hasselhoff, and by now, Greg had gone back to lifeguarding. Hasselhoff had gone to touring, you know,
for
Europe,
his
singing. Yeah, singing for his music. Right, yeah. And he didn't believe, nobody believed we could ever get it back on the air. Hasselhoff had a manager named Jan McCormick. She was about 65 years old, like your grandmother, tough as fucking nails. She would negotiate for David like from a position of strength. So we made David an executive producer, whatever, and we did. And we were able to sell 95% of the country. And foreign distribution, we were able to get Germany to put up three times as much money as they'd ever put up. The UK came in. We started selling it around the world. But, oh, now we needed our cast. We had Hasselhoff, but we needed Billy Warlock and Erica Liniak. They were our hot young couple in the first season on NBC. We couldn't afford them. So everybody took a cut in their fees, you know, went a drastic cut from network. And we did that first season, and after six episodes, we were getting money from Europe to fund those first episodes, but we wouldn't get the advertising money until the shows aired. So we were told, we were brought into the office, and we were told Baywatch has to shut down. After five episodes, you have to shut down. We have to wait a month or two until the money starts coming in. Turns out the company we did business with had no money. So we went to the set to tell the crew we had to shut down. So we offered first to put up our salaries. We would defer our salaries, you know, our executive producing salaries. They said that's not enough. So we went to the set and we told the crew we have to shut down. Our crew was so loyal to us. They said they had a meeting and that every member of the crew said that they would defer their fees.
Wow.
When the cast found out that the crew was deferring their fees and we were deferring our fees, the cast, Hasselhoff, led by Hasselhoff, the cast agreed to defer their fees.
Wow.
And we were able to stay in production because we were afraid that if we ever shut down, we might not start up again. But again, part of the survival of Baywatch. So every other studio passed except this company, All American, who had no money. We were trying to figure it out. They ended up about 6 years later selling their company for $780 million, which was Baywatch. They were brilliant. They used the Baywatch money to buy the Goodson Todman Game Show Library, which is The Price is Right and all these shows. And then they ended up with a show called American Idol and America's Got Talent. And so now this company is like, you know, huge.
Yeah, through the roof.
But what happened is after that first year, Billy and Erica were leaving. They left, everybody was panicked, and that's when we cast Pamela Anderson, David Charvet, not knowing that Pam and David were boyfriend and girlfriend.
Oh.
They didn't want to tell us because when Billy Warlock and Erica Liniak became boyfriend and girlfriend in the show, they fell in love. So their characters, Shawnee and Eddie, were falling in love, and they were falling in love. And we still couldn't afford to pay them, so they left. And when Billy left, Erica left with him. So David Charvet was afraid that if they found out that he was Pam's boyfriend, that we wouldn't cast him because we'd be afraid that if he left,
she would leave.
So they kept it a secret from us. Pam kept missing appointments. Our casting directors loved her, but she would never show up. So we almost cast Kathy Ireland. Kathy Ireland came in.
Oh, my gosh.
But Kathy Ireland had this squeaky little voice. And she was beautiful, but we couldn't cast. She's since become a billionaire and has lowered her voice.
She became a billionaire and they lowered her voice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, she succeeded.
Yeah.
You know, I'm telling you, that voice was a killer. And then Alexander Paul came in to audition for the same part as Pamela. For CJ, and she was so good, we actually created I created a character for her, a part for her. But going back to Pam, Pam finally came in to audition. She's terrific. And we say, can we see you in a bathing suit? She says, oh, no problem. We said we had a lot of bathing suits, you know, hanging out there. She had done Playboy by then.
Yeah.
And been on the cover, and there were bathing suits hanging. So, you know, go select a bathing suit that fits you, and if you don't mind. And she said, oh, it's no problem. You've all seen me anyway. And she starts getting undressed. She has a bathing suit on under it. She has her own bathing suit on under it.
But, as we often did in auditions.
So obviously she looks incredible. So she leaves the room, and we say, that's it. We found our girl. And Hasselhoff says, no, I don't like her. I don't want her.
What?
Hasselhoff was concerned. First of all, he didn't want anybody that was in Playboy because he said, this is a family show. My daughters have to watch this show, you know. And we said, David, that's great. We value your opinion, but he didn't have any creative control of the show. So we said, we're hiring her. He ultimately came around. I mean, he loved Pam. He's, you know.
She stole a lot of thunder.
The show started you know, picking up, kind of a hit show. And within 2 years, it was in the Guinness Book of World Records as the most watched television show in history.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how did we feel? Well, I knew we had made it when Mad Magazine came out with a, you know.
Baywatch thing.
Yeah, Baywatch ripoff. and Saturday Night Live did Baywatch.
Yeah, well, that's the true tell. When you're a character, when you're being spoofed on at Saturday Night Live, absolutely, you know for sure.
Well, talk about spoof. Howard Stern created a show called Son of the Beach.
That's right.
Which is a Baywatch spoof. Total Baywatch spoof. Not only did they spoof our concept, every episode of that show spoofed a specific episode of our show.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's what pissed me off more than anything else. They didn't even have to worry about stories. They just not only took our ideas, they took our literal stories. But because it's parody.
You get away with it.
You can do it.
Oh, maybe we should do a couple parodies.
There's so many Baywatch stories. I mean, it's amazing that it ever got on there. It went from a canceled show that nobody thought we could ever get on the air to barely holding on to 36 years later, we're rebooting the series.
So you're rebooting the series like as a series, like a TV series? Is it going to be called Baywatch?
Yeah.
And have you already been casting?
Haven't started casting yet.
Ladies.
not us ladies, but ladies in the audience who might be interested.
What's interesting is
go to rugbunnies.com, we'll tell you how to get in.
We've hired a female showrunner. It's a challenge.
Fucking say yes.
Well, no, without a doubt, you know, but no, except the problem
we're
is
in. We're
the
in
announcement, we may not be shooting it in Los Angeles.
We're mobile. We could go anywhere around the world.
Amazing story. The backstory. Wow. That is so cool. Thanks for sharing that with us. We'd love to have you come back, man. We want to hear about as the new Baywatch comes back out. We want to hear how things start developing.
Sure.
That'd be cool.
Want to know who the lineup is. We want to know the whole... We want to know what the bathing suit's going to look like. Well, we need to get a hold of Pam. She needs to be a rogue bunny, so we'll talk about that later. But this has been a great...
This has been great having you here. Thank you enough, Audra, for coming out here and being with us. This is cool. Going back to the Playboy stories, talking about, you know, all the backstory of Baywatch. That's insane.
Amazing.
And, you know, knowing that you're continuing on, you're going forward, I want to hear more about that. So, Audra, Michael, thank you so much. I'm Brian Alea.
I'm Victoria Fuller.
Jennifer Pershing.
And we are Rogue Bunnies Mayhem. And...
The mayhem continues.
Hey, Mayhem Familia, don't forget to click, like, and subscribe. And tell all your friends.
Also, visit us at rbmayhemshow.com. That's rbmayhemshow.com.
And I want to give a special thanks to Dapper Labs, Flow, Gig Labs, and also Flow Score. And
the Mayhem Continues!